Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Deep Dish Radio. I'm still Tim Powers, and this is still my show. Hey, thanks very much for everybody who has tuned in new to Deep Dish Radio. If you are one of the new listeners from the United Kingdom who has picked us up because of Ian Lee, or if you have come over from Ken Mills' awesome Zilch podcast, or if you're a fan of Bobby Hart or Family Affair because of my interviews with Sissy and Jody, and thank you so much. Our audience is growing, and the audience response is even greater. If you want to interact with me, here's how you can do it. Email me, tim@deepdishradio.com. It's tim@deepdishradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @deepdishradio. And let's get into what this week's episode is all about. Not that long ago, one of my very first guests was the very lovely and very talented Catherine Lee Scott, who is an actress and is most famous for her role, arguably most famous for her role as Maggie Evans on the 60s and 70s soap opera Dark Shadows. Great show. She was on about 1,200 episodes of that show, and they're all streaming on Hulu, so turn off this show and go watch Dark Shadows on Hulu. It's a trip. It is so much fun. But you've also seen her on all kinds of stuff. You've seen her on The A-Team. You've seen her on Quincy. She did an episode of The Incredible Hulk. She was just recently killed in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She did Magnum P.I. She was on Police Squad, for heaven's sake. Just a fantastic lady with a fantastic resume. She's been all over the world, and she's written quite a few books. And that's actually what brings her here today. We're not here to talk about her acting career, which is noteworthy, no question at all. But her newest book, Last Dance at the Savoy, Life, Love, and Caring for Someone with Progressive Supranuclear Palsy, has just come out. And this is, while her previous books have been fiction and very, very enjoyable, this book, enjoyable as well, but nonfiction. This is actually the love story of Catherine and her husband, who, in the course of their relationship, was diagnosed with with what's called PSP. It's a neurological disease, and there's no cure for it so far. And the story of how Catherine holds on, keeps her sanity, keeps working, but also just pours out love for her husband throughout this whole story is very, very heartwarming. And I brought her on because there ain't enough love in the universe, and this is just a fantastic love story, in addition to bringing to light the importance of PSP awareness. So if you know someone who's dealing with Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS or any other motor affective disorders, things like PSP, this is really something you should check out. You can learn a lot from it. The book is called Last Dance at the Savoy, Life, Love, and Caring for Someone with Progressive Supranuclear Palsy. And it's the Kindle edition is only $10. It's available on Amazon. And the Kindle edition is $10. The paperback is about $14. And it's really something you should check out. But don't take my word for it. Let me introduce you once again to my friend, Catherine Lee Scott, Deep Dish Radio.
In the book, you tell the story of how you met your husband, Jeff, and it is a beautiful, beautiful story, and just such a fantastic love story. Could you kind of, in your own words and in your own voice, kind of give us the high-level view of how you met Jeff?
Actually, I first met Jeff in 1968. He, at the time, I was at a party, and Jeff showed up with Tom Wolfe in a white suit, of course. Tom Wolfe had just written The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test,
right.
And I had just read it. And Jeff had already started Los Angeles Magazine, which was 8 years ahead of New York Magazine, but Tom Wolfe was writing for New York Magazine. And they showed up in the company of a friend of mine, a photographer. And so I started talking to these three guys. My friend introduced me to the other two. And Jeff and I just hit it off from the beginning. It was just magical. But I had a boyfriend at the time. And Jeff mentioned that he had a girlfriend. I was doing Dark Shadows in New York. I was doing the show live.
Right.
And Jeff, of course, was running Los Angeles Magazine. We were a continent apart. So there was no romance. I think there was just a crush on my part. And then we saw each other again a couple of times when I went out to Los Angeles because I did a couple of interview shows for Dark Shadows. And then almost 20 years later, we ran into each other again. By that time, I had started Pomegranate Press. I had already published quite a number of books. And one of his editors selected one of my coffee table books. It was the Lobby Card book that Joan Bennett wrote the foreword to.
Right.
Lobby Card's the classic films. They chose it as a Christmas gift book selection. Actually, CBS did too. I had a very good year that year. And I went into the office to meet with the editor who was going to take me for lunch. And Jeff was there. And he walked down the hallway and he took my hand and said, "It's been a long time." And then we kept holding hands. And we walked down the hallway holding hands.
And what year is this?
This would have been 1988.
Okay.
I mean, I met him in 68. This was 1988, 20 years later. And as the elevator doors were closing, he finally let go of my hand. And I thought, oh, my God.
Wow.
We had lunch together the next day and everything moved along very quickly after that. And we married in the spring of 1991. We were married May 27th, 1991.
You move quick.
We moved pretty quickly, all things considered. Jeff's wife had passed away. She had multiple sclerosis.
Wow.
And
wow.
I mention that because when Jeff was diagnosed with progressive supranuclear palsy, which is also a movement disorder.
Right.
And a brain disease. I think that Jeff had a better idea of what we were going to be dealing with than I did because he had already been a caregiver for his wife, Barbara, who passed away 12 years after she was diagnosed with MS, which was very quick. She never went into remission. I mean, there are people who can live with multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease for decades.
Right.
And lead very good, full, active lives. In Barbara's case, she never went into remission, and she was diagnosed shortly after they were married, I think within the month of their marriage,
right.
And she passed away 12 years later. So Jeff had a very, very good idea of what we were facing.
That's really interesting because, you know, Jeff's diagnosis took a long time.
Well, yeah.
So in the back of his mind, you know, when things started happening not quite right, you know, in the back of his head, he had to be doing the math.
Well, you know, this is interesting. I've asked myself this. I mean, one always looks back. We had time when we could have maybe discussed all of these things. But honestly, you know, people pass away and you just think, why did we never talk about that? Yes, there were indications that there was something wrong with Jeff. There was slurring speech. There were many, many falls. He would always fall backward, but we always found an excuse for it that he had, you know, there was a crack in the sidewalk or the chair was wobbly or there was always a reason. And it took a long time before we really really understood that there was a significant problem. Jeff may have had an inkling before I did, because he would never let me go into, you know, when we did start seeing a neurologist, Jeff would not let me go into the examining room with him.
Right.
I thought it was just sort of a guy thing. But when things started getting really serious, I just said, I'm sorry, you've got to let me hear what the doctor is saying. And then, of course, at first, the doctors thought that Jeff had Parkinson's. And in fact, this family of diseases, and I should probably explain to your listeners a little bit about it.
Yeah.
There's a family of five diseases, essentially. There may be more, but essentially five diseases known as prime of life diseases. They used to be called Parkinson's Plus, although it's just a Parkinsonian syndrome. It's not really Parkinson's. There are five of them. One is called corticobasal degeneration, CBD. There's multiple systems atrophy, MSA. There's Lewy body with dementia, which is the disease that Robin Williams was diagnosed with. There's also ALS. Everybody knows what Lou Gehrig's disease is because of Lou Gehrig, sure. ALS. But nobody knows about PSP, which strikes about 20,000 Americans, which is the same number as ALS, but nobody knows about PSP, which has claimed the lives of not only my husband, but Dudley Moore, and very recently, maybe 5 months ago, Richard Rainwater, the billionaire financier,
right.
who through his foundation has donated millions and millions to PSP research.
Wow.
So those are the five diseases. Jeff had a very clear-cut case of PSP. The hallmarks of that disease are you fall down, always backward. It's called retropulsion. Now I know all of these terms. and then also an inability to shift the eyes up and down. And I was always saying to Jeff, well, you wouldn't stumble if you were, you know, if you'd look where you're going. He was not able to shift his eyes. And he would get angry with me when I would ask him, you know, I'd point out something to the right or the left. And he would say, I'm doing something else. The point is he couldn't look to the right.
Sure.
So there were a lot of little things, but another thing that happens with this disease is that the symptoms keep changing. The slurring that I noticed for a while disappeared to be replaced with a kind of impulsive behavior. He would all of a sudden move too quickly, and I would think, oh, well, that's why he's fallen. He would also repeat things three times. I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. It's another symptom. So the symptoms kept changing. But when Jeff was finally diagnosed with progressive supranuclear palsy, and I looked it up and realized what we were going to be dealing with, we had only about 4 years. It was 4 years from diagnosis. It's usually it's usually a disease that results in fatality, most often with pneumonia, 4 to 6 years after diagnosis. So, Tim, one of the reasons why I wrote Last Dance at the Savoy was really to raise awareness of the disease and also to provide a book for other caregivers, letting them know what I learned. Because I wish I had had a book like this when Jeff was diagnosed. It was all brand new. It was, the learning curve was terrific, and there was no template that I saw that I could follow.
That's got to be difficult for you in that particular situation, because with Lou Gehrig's disease and traditional, forgive me for using the term traditional Parkinson's, there's all kinds of support and there's all kinds of conventional knowledge and things like that. But with PSP, it doesn't sound like there was a lot of support for you in that situation. What kind of things did you have to lean on while you went through those 4 years with Jeff?
Well, one of Jeff's early doctors made two suggestions. One, he said that there was a Parkinson's Plus support group. That's what it was called then.
Okay.
And I went to that, and I have to say, I did not handle that first meeting very well. And I write about that in Last Dance at the Savoy, because it's very difficult when all of a sudden something this this major with such consequences happens, and it's out of the blue. So I did not handle that first meeting very well, because I saw people at the meeting who were in a much more advanced state than Jeff, so I could see what was down the road. So that was one thing. There was a support group. But otherwise, at that time, there was very little. And even the support group, I met two women who were also dealing with the sort of caregiving that I was dealing with.
Right.
I sort of bonded with them. But otherwise, there were so many things that I learned later that would have been helpful then. I didn't realize. Here's one good example.
Great.
I did not realize, because it happened again and again, that you know, I would be helping Jeff in the middle of the night, and he would just suddenly stop moving. And that's another symptom of the disease. The body just freezes, and he was rigid. And I would feel him slipping from my arms. There were a couple of times that we spent the night on the floor. I'd put a pillow under both our, you know, under our heads and pull a blanket over until I could call the neighbor to come and help me the next morning. I didn't realize then that all you had to do was register with your local fire department, and you know, you can give them a ring and they'll come in the middle of the night, no sirens, and help you in a non-emergency situation. They'll help pick you up off the floor.
Wow.
And I didn't think in terms of, I mean, there's so many other things, for example, that I know now. We discovered this by accident, but it's in the book. Singing helps release that mechanism in the brain that stops the body from moving. And once we discovered it, whenever I was walking Jeff, we would sing. We would sing everything from Bicycle Built for Two to On Christian Soldiers to Row, Row, Row Your Boat, whatever. One night we were singing some Enchanted Evening from South Pacific. Anything to get those feet moving. So I do put a couple of things quite a bit in the book, really, just to say, here's something I found that worked. Try it.
Wow.
So that's also why I wrote the book.
And, you know, it's weird. If this had happened 20 years ago, there would be a little more understanding about there not being a whole lot of resources available. But this is 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
And, you know, the internet's in full force, right?
So it is. But what I always looked for on the internet were the personal stories, because, you know, as I've said, there was information about the disease, how long, what the general lifespan of it was.
All very clinical.
That kind of stuff.
Right.
But what I really wanted were stories from other people, because that's what you really need. You need to hear the stories of the day-to-day challenges. This will come up. Here's how we dealt with it. It's the doctors can tell you, a fair amount. The internet can provide information,
right?
But it's the personal stories.
Has there been an increase in those personal stories in the 6 years or 5 or 6 years since Jeff's been gone?
Yeah, there are. Mine is. Probably the most complete book. I say that only because, you go on the internet and there are other books. One of them only about 23 pages long.
Right.
They're written by spouses or family members of the sort of thing that I did. But my book contains a resource guide. It also has an introduction by Dr. Yvette Bordelon, who is one of Jeff's doctors and who's on the board of Cure PSP. And she talks about the clinical trials and so on. And also, another benefit to my book is that one of Jeff's earliest doctors suggested that I keep a journal. And I said, well, as a writer, I already do that. And he said, well, I'm suggesting that because there is no treatment or cure for this disease, we're going to be prescribing medications off-label, meaning medications meant for Parkinson's, like carbidopa levodopa, known as Sinemet,
right,
or restless leg syndrome, or Alzheimer's, none of which Jeff had. But there was always the chance that a medication might contain an ingredient that would just improve Jeff's quality of life. So he said, keep track of those medications, and you'll know on a day-to-day basis if there's any improvement. So my book actually is taken from the journal that I kept for essentially 4 years. So one can follow the progression of the disease and the medications that we used and what the benefits were. So it's a much more complete book than perhaps some of the others are, thanks to the fact that that doctor told me to keep a journal. I mean, it provides, it became the template for the book.
That's really, really interesting. And your skills as a writer, your, you know, just the fact that you have the daily habit of journaling had to make this a lot easier.
So that's the thing. And I am a writer, so, you know, naturally this is something that I would do. So I'm very pleased that this book is out there. I would it's helpful. Whoever writes a book about this or puts something on the internet, it all helps. The other thing is that Jeff participated in a couple of clinical drug trials and also an environmental study in which I was his control. So I write about the clinical drug trials and also the fact that so much has now been poured into PSP research and it is benefiting the research into other diseases, including Alzheimer's.
Wow.
And the reason is that it is a brain disease. It's even helping those, you know, the football players and so on who are...
With concussions and things like that?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The research into that is also very much a part of Cure PSP research. Again, because they're discovering that it has to do with a protein buildup. I'm not a doctor, so.
Right.
Dr. Yvette Bordelon has discussed that completely in her foreword. So there are many benefits to Cure PSP research, and now I'm also a spokesperson for Cure PSP, along with Patricia Richardson, whom you may remember from Home Improvement.
Sure.
Yeah, her father passed away from PSP in 2007,
oh my.
And she is the national spokesperson for the disease. And now, when I did my book signings in Los Angeles last week, I did two of them, actually. But Patricia and Yvette supported me, and in fact, I had all three of us up on stage doing a Q&A after one of my talks. So anything that we can do to help other people who are feeling very isolated. This is an isolating disease.
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I got from the book. I mean, there are tons of clinical there's tons of clinical information, there's tons of medical information about PSP, but really your story is the story of this couplehood. And from 1970, from 68 to when you finally got married in 1991,
yeah.
You know, you had a few years, and there's some real solid, beautiful romance there right up until the diagnosis. And it's so sweet, and it's told from such.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So a beautiful, sweet standpoint, and then there's this complication. Throughout the 4 years that you had with Jeff afterwards, what kind of things did you do to keep the marriage, keep the relationship going? You know,
This is interesting. I should probably explain that the title of the book, Last Dance at the Savoy, it has to do with the fact that when I met Jeff again, of course, I was a very busy actress. And I was filming in England. I did a little television series there with Powers Booth called Chandler Town, based on the Chandler short story detective stories.
Right.
And I did a few other things. And Jeff came over, and it was while we were dancing together at the Savoy Hotel that we sort of realized that we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. And so I use that metaphor throughout the book. And Jeff accompanied me quite often when I went off on location. And we, of course, did a lot of traveling because as editor of Los Angeles Magazine, there were lots of stories that he did, particularly on, you know, California and the coast.
Right.
And also he went with me when I went to Italy as a guest at Steicom, which is the Italian Star Trek fan club.
Great.
And every year they have a gathering. And so
did episodes of The Next Generation, Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's right, I did. Who Watches the Watchers in Star Trek The Next Generation. So Jeff went with me on that, and I describe all of that and also the Dark Shadows festivals that we attended together in some detail because it was while doing Steicon in Italy that Jeff had one of his worst falls. And we had to deal with it. Also, when I was filming in England on another occasion, we had some problems. So interwoven in the book is very much the love story and the kind of lives that we led together and how we dealt with this progressive neurological disorder.
Well, the complications of marriage is never easy. You know, second marriages are never easy. And marriage and romance as you progress through life is never easy. And then and then complicated by, in order to keep things working, there's some effort to it, you know?
Well, there is. And I'm sure that you got a chuckle out of it. By the way, Tim,
yes.
We've talked before about my other books, and you know I tend to write funny.
Yes.
So there's a lot of humor in this book. And I'm sure you laughed when you saw that reference that I made to marriage. I said it's like two planets revolving around each other in this strange solar system called marriage.
That's exactly right.
And it is. It can be very awkward. Jeff and I both had strong personalities and we both had careers that were demanding. Our love sustained itself right up until the last moment when he passed away in my arms. So it is, the book is very much a love story, but there's also a huge amount of humor in it because if you're a caregiver without a sense of humor, all is lost. Believe me.
Yeah, when I got the book, I'm like, oh, I don't want to see someone I esteem so much, you know, just suffer through this horrible thing. But you do it with such a sense of humor and such a and you know you walk away from it with so much peace that if this were a work of fiction, I would say the character trajectory for Catherine you know, has this wonderful resolution at the end where you come to peace about it and provide, you know, a nice template for someone who is going through the same thing. Can you tell me about some of the people that you've encountered as you processed all this, you know, while you're with Jeff and you're dealing with the disease, or even afterwards, as you're trying to pick up the pieces and recover?
Well, first of all, one thing that did happen, just very shortly after Jeff passed away, Tim Burton decided to do a Dark Shadows movie with Johnny Depp. And David Selby, Jonathan Frid, Laura Parker, and I flew to London to be in the film. Now, that was only, it was really just a scant 2 months after Jeff passed away.
Wow.
And so the fact that I did a lot of other work as well. So that that made a difference for me, because I jumped right back in. I say that this is an isolating disease, because obviously I had to kick back on my acting work, certainly on my publishing work. The only thing I really could do was my writing. And I wrote Dark Passages during the time Jeff was ill. I also wrote a lengthy piece for Opera News magazine. And I also wrote Return to Collinwood, the Dark Shadows book about the five decades of Dark Shadows.
Right.
So the writing was really what sustained me during that period of time. But then afterward, I really kind of jumped back in to some of the things I hadn't been able to do for a while. I did go to London. I write about that. That was only about 3 months before Jeff passed away. And I look back on it now as one of the best things that I did. I was scared to go because Jeff was very ill, He was, how do I describe it? He'd by then lost the ability to speak and he couldn't walk. But my brother came out from Minneapolis and looked after him. And I had full-time help in the house, but I went to London for 5 days. I had some business to do there, but also lovely Julian Fellowes, you know, who wrote Downton Abbey and
right.
is, you know, Lord Fellowes. And he and his wife invited me to the House of Lords and for lunch. And that magical experience, my other friends who invited me for teas and dinners, and it was one of those things where I got completely away and I gained perspective on it. I was only considering flight time and everything. I was probably gone for about 4.5 days. But that 4.5 days gave me perspective. I came back and having been with Jeff every day, you don't necessarily see the huge change. But I came back and I fully understood that we were in the last stages. And it really helped me in terms of acceptance and in grieving, and also, most importantly, in making the most of that precious last few months that we had.
Wow.
So, yes, I talk about that in the book as well, because a couple of times now recently I have friends who are in a caregiving situation, and I've encouraged them to take a couple of days to just get away, do something totally different. And because you come back refreshed, but you come back with fresh eyes.
Wow. Yeah, it's really, yeah, perspective is a great thing, especially from a writer's standpoint, because you're always evaluating, you're always looking, you're always observing. You know, it's whether you're a writer or a comedian or a screenwriter or whatever, you know, you're always assessing your environment and your relationships.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, that perspective is certainly a very, very strong thing. How did Jeff accept, you know, as he watched your time pass and he realized that there's a finite amount of time he had left? How did he process that?
You know, I think, again, it had so much to do with the fact that his first wife, Barbara, had MS. And Jeff had tremendous grace anyway under pressure. He handled it beautifully. He was very accepting. His spirits were always good. I think that there were probably bouts of anger and why me, but I didn't see them. I really marveled at it. I don't know how I would react getting a diagnosis like that, but I've since seen a couple of other friends get a bad diagnosis and handle it with tremendous grace. So maybe it's something that maybe it's something we're given just to see us through. Jeff was really wonderful through it all. I remember when people would say, "How are you doing?" He would say, "Could be worse. No pain, no discomfort. Besides, this is life. Nobody gets out alive." I mean, he just had this wonderful, wonderful attitude. The other thing that I did, and I talk about this in Last Dance at the Savoy because it has so much to do with the title, but especially in that last year, as he started to lose his voice and his ability to move, his mind was sharp. I would invite people over for dinner. And it was just, you know, one or two at a time so that Jeff could totally concentrate on them. And if they were patient, he could speak. When he got even worse, I turned our master bedroom into what amounted to a cocktail lounge. And I simply let all of our friends know that we had happy hour between 5 and 7. That meant that Jeff could get his strength together during the day. He anticipated that 2 hours. I even put a little round table with a cloth and chairs near the French doors that led out to the garden, so that, you know, it had. And there was no sign of that Jeff was an invalid. He was in, you know, his chair,
right?
But otherwise, there was no medication. There was no smell of antiseptic and whatnot. We were at home, and I made it look as fresh and pretty as possible. And people would come over. They could have cake, coffee, a martini, a beer, whatever, and just sit and spend time in Jeff's company. And it was a very cheerful time. And I have to recommend that because, again, it's an isolating disease. With ALS, people know that with ALS, you are alert to the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that your body betrays you with mobility and speech. It's a heartbreaking disease.
But you did your best throughout, and it sounds like the transition could have been a lot worse. But you really took steps to, Jeff had his own fortitude to keep him from having too much, "Why is this happening to me?" and let that override his personality over the last 4 years. Plus, he had, if you'll pardon the phrase, such an amazing cheerleader behind him.
Oh, thanks for saying that. But, you know, I think just early on, you always think, what if I find out that I've got 6 months to live or whatever?
Right.
How do I want to spend that? Well, boy, that's a personal choice. My mother got just such a diagnosis, and I actually write about that in the book too, because she made her own personal choice, and I think she made a very, very good one. And she handled it with tremendous grace. When you know, and not that many people get that chance,
right.
But when you know that you have a finite amount of time, how do you deal with it? How do you want to leave this world?
Did your mom consult you in that decision, or did she just kind of lay it on you?
Well, no, she didn't consult us. I happened to be in London, and my mother called, and she said, "You remember that little lump in my neck? Well, it's lymphoma, and I'm not doing anything about it." And I supported her. I said, "What would you like me to do?" And she said, "I want you home. I want you with me." And of course, we flew back. And I took care of her, at the end of her life. And and Jeff was in L.A., but because Jeff was on his own, that was when I fully realized that we had a problem. Because in marriage, or when two people are living together, even roommates, for heaven's sake, you tend to pick up the slack for the other person. And it happens over a period of time gradually, and you don't realize what you're doing.
Right.
But I was doing all the packing. I was handling all the luggage. I was the one, I was doing everything without realizing that I was doing it. Jeff was on his own while I was caring for my mother. And oh, did I see the difference.
How did he do on his own?
Well, he didn't do very well. I mean, friends would say, he wasn't able to put his jacket on. I had to help him with his jacket. We took him for dinner, and he had trouble getting into the car. Well, buttons weren't buttoned. And when I came home, I saw that, jars didn't have their lids screwed on. That, in other words, he couldn't use two hands to do something like button or screw a jar, or, I mean, there were just tons of things. And he'd also had a minor traffic accident.
He was driving as he's going through all of this.
Because, again, one does it. Oh, you would be amazed at the number of people who have diminished ability, but because they learn or they accommodate their problems, it takes a while before you just think this person should not be driving. So it just, all of this is in hindsight when you're actually going through it. And when I was there with my mother, who decided not to have any chemo, just palliative care, which was her decision at the age of 93, God bless her, she said, rather than, buy myself a few months with chemo, I'd rather go out with all my hair and feeling fine and spending time with my grandchildren and children.
Prior to this, was she a spry and kind of
very, very active?
Yeah, I.
Oh my God, she was amazing. I mean, at 93, she was still driving. Of course, as a matter of fact, her driver license was due for renewal, and she said, I suppose I won't be driving much any longer, but I want to see if I can pass my test, which she did. She passed it only a couple weeks before she passed away.
Now, other than you, how many kids and grandkids did she have?
Well, she's got 10 grandkids and 4 children.
Wow.
Of course, we were all around her when she passed away. And she was just how can I say this? Full of life. But then, she was in hospice care the last time. But I was there with her the whole time, which I'm so grateful for.
Sure.
And in a way, it opened my eyes to what Jeff was going through. Another thing that I talk about in the book is the value of hospice care. People think of it as end-of-life care. It is actually quality-of-life care, because there are people who go on hospice and care and improve and go off hospice care. There are 5 criteria for being eligible.
Okay.
And it is pure palliative care. But Jeff was even in a clinical drug trial at the same time he was in home hospice care. And you get such good care. And if you can avail yourself of it, it so improves your life. when you are dealing with something for which there is no cure, that you know, you are not going to survive this disease.
Right.
So I'm glad that we availed ourselves of that. I do talk about it in the book because so many people, you know, struggle and they don't turn to it until, you know, they think of it as something that should happen only in the final few days. And that's just not the case.
Yeah, with regard to Jeff, you know, Jeff really comes across in your book as kind of a man's man. You know, he was smart. He was an editor of a major publication. He had this great backstory. I can't talk about him as anything other than a literary character because I never met the guy. But you know, he comes across as kind of this Dashiell Hammond kind of noble tough guy, right? And
he was very much a guy.
Well, then it came across beautifully in your writing, and to have him, you know, at the end of his days, reliant on such a dedicated partner, had to at the same time be comforting and kind of tough for him. But
you just nailed it, because I talk about that in Last Dance at the Savoy also, which is role reversal. The big guy that, you know, always took care of you now needs to be taken care of, or the wife who was always there fulfilling your needs now needs her needs taken care of.
Yep.
There is role reversal, and it is really tough on both parties because, you know, I wanted my husband things have changed. So I do talk about that in a very candid way. I'm sure you're also referring to the fact that Princess Diana used to come and visit him all the time.
Yes.
And of course, she had already passed away. Jeff had a sweet spot for her anyway. We stayed up late watching her funeral. But I remember coming up from the kitchen one day, and he told me that Princess Diana had dropped by. I was kind of shocked. And then I realized that whenever I was out of the room doing laundry or making lunch or doing something, getting the mail, she would sometimes drop in. I know this had to do with the progression of his disease and hallucinations from some of the medications. But I also realized that he was lonely, and that he had this secret visitor. And one time he told me that they'd had cosmopolitans.
Delightful.
I had no idea that that's what she liked to drink, but Jeff told me she did. But anyway, it was sort of delightful. And I would say, well, say hi to her from me. Sorry I missed her. But, you know, toward the end, it's not dementia in Jeff's case. It is a kind of a hallucinations, which, you know, the doctor did warn me could happen. But I'm not so dumb that I didn't realize what it was all about. I was the caregiver. I was the person there to plump up the pillows and
right.
Do all of those other kinds of caregiving chores. And if Princess Diana brought a little romance to his life, so be it.
Okay. Catherine, do you think that your training in theater helped you deal with some of this stuff?
Oh, gosh. My training in life.
Well, yeah, but I mean specifically as an actress, because what it sounds like you're doing is an improvisational exercise where you're in your situation and you've heard the phrase, you yes and through it.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
agree and you move on.
Yeah. I was certainly doing a lot of that. It was what you're referring to really is accepting the new normal.
Right.
Because almost every day there was something new. It was, uh-oh, he can't do that now. And then you'd think back a week ago, he could talk. Today he can't. So we would always hit these plateaus. And every morning when we woke up, it seemed to be one more thing. You just say, new normal. We'll have to adjust to that.
Wow.
So yeah, it's very improvisatory.
And then you adjust to a new life with, you know, Jeff leaves you, and you have to process that, and you have to come to peace with that. And here we are 5 years later.
I know.
And you are you're helping people who are in the same situation as you, and at the same time, you've published a few books since then. You've had the opportunity to do some audiobooks and some acting again. What is life like for you now, Catherine?
Well, life for me now is I miss Jeff very, very much.
Of course.
That'll always go on. But the Last Dance at the Savoy, Life, Love, and Caring for Someone with Progressive Supranuclear Palsy, came out on April 16th, which was the fifth anniversary of Jeff's passing. It's available on Amazon in print book, ebook, and audio. And I will be attending the 50th anniversary of Dark Shadows in Tarrytown on June 27th.
How exciting.
And I'm very excited about that because I'll be with, I just saw Laura and David Selby and everybody 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But I'll be with everybody again. I mean, we were all in the recording booth doing another Big Finish production. Mitch Ryan, Chris Pennock, Jimmy Storm, Lisa Richardson, we're all together. And I saw John Carlin not that long ago. So we'll all be together at the Dark Shadows Festival, June 27th in Tarrytown, New York, at the DoubleTree Hotel there. And that'll be a huge celebration. And I will have all of my recent books on hand, of course. I'll have Last Dance at the Savoy there because everybody knew and loved Jeff. And I'll have Jinxed and Down and Out in Beverly Hills and Dark Shadows, Return to Collinwood, and I'll have all of that there.
How exciting. How exciting. Obviously, Tarrytown's coming up, but are there new projects, new books, new exciting things?
Just 2 days ago, I sent my agent my newest book, which I've just completed. It's a novel called September Girl. It is not a mystery. It's just a standalone women's fiction. I'm very, very pleased to have that book finished. I have no idea when it'll be published, but the book is done. So I'm going to take a little break now.
Okay.
I'm gathering together all of the things that I want to auction off at the Dark Shadows Festival to raise funds for Cure PSP research. I have a number of vintage memorabilia items that I am going to...
These are props that just kind of left in your purse at the end of filming. When you say vintage items, they're not Dark Shadows props that you just kind of appropriated?
Yes. I've got a few things. Okay, one thing that I am going to remember: famous Dick Smith, the legendary makeup artist who just passed away this last year.
Right.
He created that wonderful latex scar that I used
right
in Dark Shadows, and that'll be one of the items that I'm auctioning off.
You actually have the scar?
I actually have it.
That's funny.
Yeah, my very first script, episode one of 1,225 episodes.
Right, because Maggie was in the very first episode.
That's right. So all of those things will be auctioned.
And that's all to raise money for ALS research. The book is called Last Dance at the Savoy. It's available as a paperback. It's available as an ebook, and it's all available at Amazon.com. So you know how to use Amazon. Go over there, look for Catherine Lee Scott and all of her books, but especially this one, Last Dance at the Savoy. Thanks again, Catherine. Always a pleasure to have you back on the show. And, of course, you're welcome back anytime. If you have a guest you'd like to hear on this show, make sure you email them, you Facebook them, and tell them all about Deep Dish Radio with Tim Powers. Until next time, that's me, Tim Powers. See you later.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.